What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
It's Friday, March 8th, and if that was any indication, it's game on. We start here. In a rowdy capital, President Biden gives a State of the Union you might confuse with a re-election rally.
You can't love your country only when you win.
We'll break down the biggest moments. Meanwhile, in Alabama, in vitro clinics are back in service.
And so now they're shielded from that kind of legal liability.
But one law is not going to put the legal concerns to rest. And who do you have in your Oscar pool?
Oppenheimer and Barbie are the movies that define that year.
Our entertainment team has watched all the movies you haven't, and it's preview time. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. In a presidential election year, a State of the Union address is often quickly wiped away by, you know, the voting. These things are often held at the dawn of a new year with a slate of primaries right after. Well, as President Joe Biden took the limo ride down Pennsylvania Avenue to the Capitol last night, this is March. Super Tuesday is now in the rearview mirror. The parties have decided on their nominees. And with that, voters have asked questions about Biden's fitness, his energy level, does he still got it? So more than any other State of the Union in recent memory, this was a big one, a chance to right the ship, or perhaps a chance to stumble.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
Well, as Biden took the floor, accompanied by loud cheers from his supporters,
if I were smart, I'd go home now.
He faced a nation filled with lots of skeptical voters, and he hit the gas.
So let's build the future together. Let's remember who we are. We are the United States of America.
In an energetic, mile-a-minute address, the president ratcheted up the stakes, claimed the moral high ground, goaded Republicans, and more or less denounced former President Donald Trump over and over. This was just as much his State of the Union address as it was one of his biggest campaign speeches you will see this year. Let's start the day with someone who was there in the chamber as this all went down. ABC senior congressional correspondent Rachel Scott joins us. Rachel, what stuck out to you here?
Just how defiant President Biden was. Look, this might be the State of the Union address in the House chamber, but no, this was really President Biden making his case for why he deserves a second term.
Here's the simple truth. You can't love your country only when you win.
This was a feisty, a fiery speech. He was clearly reveling in this sort of political moment here.
My predecessor told the NRA, he's proud he did nothing on guns when he was president.
And even though he never mentioned Donald Trump once by name, he repeatedly kept saying, my predecessor, referring to him multiple times.
My predecessor and some of you here seek to bury the truth about January 6th. I will not do that.
And then he turned to the Republicans there in the room. He was not afraid to take them on directly, on everything from immigration to Social Security to health care to Medicare.
Republicans can cut Social Security and give more tax breaks to the wealthy. That's the proposal.
And that's when we really started to see something quite unusual happen there in the chamber. President Biden started sparring with Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh, no. You guys don't want another $2 trillion tax cut? I kind of thought that's what your plan was.
She shouted at him. She called him a liar. He then turned to the bipartisan border deal, which was negotiated by Democrats and Republicans in the Senate.
The Border Patrol Union has endorsed this bill. The Federal Chamber of Commerce is... You're saying low. Look at the facts.
Well, he looked over to House Republicans who blocked that bill at the urging of Donald Trump, and he called on them to pass it, to get it done. So Marjorie Taylor Greene interrupts the president and says this is about Laken Riley, and that is that Georgia student who was killed allegedly by an undocumented immigrant, and she started challenging him.
An innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right.
So the president really seizing on that moment, trying to take her on head on, show that he's not afraid of sort of any political fight here.
To her parents, I say, my heart goes out to you, having lost children myself. I understand.
And what's really ironic about all of this, Brad, is the new House Speaker, Mike Johnson, said he didn't want to see any of this at all. Look, he said he wanted decorum, civility. On his way into the chamber, he told reporters that he believed Republicans were going to behave themselves. Well, clearly, that did not happen, Brad.
Well, and it was interesting because as on the ball as Biden was here, he also had like some sort of marble mouth moments. And then it was really interesting to hear that sound from him where he's almost repeating Marjorie Taylor Greene's phrasing about migrants. Like, he's calling them illegals in that moment. And now you're having a lot of backlash from his own party saying this is not how we talk about these people. With that in mind, I guess what other issues really rose to the fore as he made this address?
Well, Brad, one big issue was additional funding for Ukraine.
If anybody in this room thinks Putin will stop at Ukraine, I assure you he will not.
Look, Democrats and Republicans have not figured out how to come together on this. And that's where you really started seeing many of these divisions on full display. When the president said the country would stand with Ukraine.
Ukraine can stop Putin if we stand with Ukraine and provide the weapons.
We noticed that barely any Republicans stood up in the room. Even when the president said he wouldn't let Putin win, we only saw a handful, maybe around a dozen of House Republicans stand up and applaud for that. Drawing a sharp comparison on the other side, you had Democrats on their feet.
I know the last 5 months have been gut-wrenching for so many people, for the Israeli people, for the Palestinian people, and so many here in America.
There have been multiple events that have been interrupted by people who are protesting his staunch support for Israel, saying that he is not doing enough when it comes to providing humanitarian aid to Gaza. And so the president, obviously keenly aware of that heading into this election year, announces that he will establish a sort of seaport, this temporary pier that is designed to provide more humanitarian aid to Gaza.
I'm directing the U.S. military to lead an emergency mission to establish a temporary pier in the Mediterranean on the coast of Gaza that can receive large shipments carrying food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters. No U.S. boots will be on the ground.
And he tried to draw this line, Brad, where he said that he strongly supports Israel's right to defend itself, but he also believes that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu needs to create more of a pathway to allow aid into Gaza.
46,000 new projects have been announced all across your communities. And by the way, I noticed some of you have strongly voted against it, or they're cheering on that money coming in.
And Brad, we know that Republicans have really tried to take on President Biden on the economy. This is a top issue for voters heading into this November election. Well, President Biden started referencing his track record, and this is something that Democrats really wanted to see.
If any of you don't want that money in your district, just let me know.
And so you heard the president reference the infrastructure bill, something that even the Republicans who voted against it now sometimes tout in their own districts.
We knew reproductive rights was going to be a big part of this. It's clearly something he wants to run on.
Send me a Congress that supports the right to choose. I promise you, I'll restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land again.
He invited several guests from other states, people who had been impacted by abortion bans. You spoke to perhaps the most high-profile one of them. What did she tell you?
One of the president's guests, Brad, was Kate Cox, and you may remember her. She was the first pregnant woman to sue the state of Texas, seeking an emergency abortion.
I mean, you're told that your baby has virtually no chance of survival.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the Texas Supreme Court did not rule in her favor. She ended up having to flee the state to get that emergency abortion.
It was really heartbreaking because I was so excited for a third baby. It's the hardest news I've ever received.
She wanted that pregnancy, but every day that went by that she continued to carry that child, it posed a greater risk to her health.
The risk of hemorrhage, the risk of uterine rupture.
I'd been to the emergency room on multiple occasions.
And she was not the only one there in the chamber. Her doctor, who wanted to help her, who said that she was medically trained to provide the care that she needed, was also there. But because of the laws in the state, there was really nothing that she could do.
The care of patients should be evidence-based. It should be based on the standards of care.
And they really both wanted to send a strong message that even though they were the ones in the chamber for the State of the Union, that this is happening to women everywhere, and that they see this not necessarily as a political issue, but a matter of health care.
Those bragging about overturning Roe v. Wade have no clue about the power of women, but they found out When reproductive freedom was on the ballot, we won in 2022 and 2020, and we'll win again in 2024.
The president is really trying to use the issue of reproductive rights, abortion rights, to rally the Democratic base. He knows that this has been very successful for Democrats in special elections as well as the midterms. And Democrats, well, they had his back on this one. When you looked out into the chamber, there was a sea of Democratic women wearing the color of white. They said that was to show support and to send a strong message on reproductive rights, Brad.
Well, so at the end of the day, Rachel, I mean, if the issue here was a lot of Americans are wondering if President Biden still got it, did any of this work? Will any of this have an impact?
Yeah. You know, I think our colleague Martha Raddatz put it best. As much of this was the State of the Union, this was also about the state of Joe Biden. The White House has been looking at these polls. They know that some Americans believe that President Biden is simply too old for the job. Well, he understood what was at stake here. He knew that he had to deliver a strong speech. And so in that way, sure, Democrats say that he delivered. But when you look at the overall outlook at where we are in this bitterly divided Congress in the middle of an election year with still pressing issues ahead when it comes to funding for Ukraine, funding for Israel, funding for Gaza, immigration, a crisis at the border, it is really hard to see how Democrats and Republicans are going to come together to address any of those key issues when they certainly were not on the same page during this address.
Yeah, and again, the tonal stuff that you're mentioning is so interesting. That 10, 15 years ago, somebody shouting, "You lie," in the middle of a speech, that was a scandal. Then people last year just kind of generally booing Biden once was a scandal. Now, almost just back and forth the entire speech, including from Biden. Like, he seemed to love it. Rachel Scott, there on the Hill as we speak. She never leaves. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
And really quickly, before we go to the break, I just want to mention the Republican response. It was delivered by the youngest member of the Senate. Katie Britt is 42 years old. She's from Alabama. She literally spoke from her kitchen table.
And, what we saw was the performance of a permanent politician who has actually been in office for longer than I've been alive.
And while she was smiling for much of this direct-to-camera address, her tone quickly became severe.
Our families are hurting. Our country can do better. And you don't have to look any further than the crisis at our southern border to see it.
She delivered a scathing rebuke of Biden's border policies. She mentioned the murder in Georgia. At one point, she graphically described migrants being raped as they waited to get into the country, laying the blame for all this at the feet of President Biden. You can clearly see where the GOP sees vulnerability and where the focus of these debates will be as the year goes on. Right, next up on Start Here, it's not clear what action we'll see in Congress, but we are seeing swift action in Alabama. The new developments for IVF after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So you heard the president's remarks about abortion access, but what about IVF? After all, the ruling by the Alabama State Supreme Court a few weeks ago, classifying frozen embryos as children, essentially shuttered fertility clinics statewide over liability concerns. Well, now, Alabama Governor Kay Ivey has signed a new law shielding these clinics, and some have started reopening. Let's bring in ABC's Elizabeth Scholze to break it all down. Elizabeth, I feel like I've got whiplash here. What is the current law of the land when it comes to the state of Alabama?
Okay, so this new law basically goes back to the status quo of IVF in Alabama before this whole Supreme Court decision upended everything. What this law does, Brad, is that it gives civil and criminal immunity to doctors who do IVF. And the reason why that's important is because the fallout of the decision by the Supreme Court that embryos qualify as people meant that those doctors could face lawsuits for wrongful death. They could be basically accused of a crime when they discard embryos during IVF, which is something that typically happens during the IVF process.
We're concerned that this ruling has far-reaching consequences for what we feel is safe to freeze and safe to discard.
And so now they're shielded from that kind of legal liability. That basically means in this law, they can go forward with IVF, they can do what they were doing before the Supreme Court ruling came out, and it can be back to business as usual for them to move forward with those treatments, especially for those families who were in the middle of their treatments, who were in this limbo for a couple of weeks as this was getting sorted out.
So are clinics there reopening now, or are there still hesitations because of the state Supreme Court?
Right. So we've been talking to the doctors at these clinics, like asking them, is this enough for you? And at one of the clinics, Alabama Fertility Specialists, it's one of the major clinics in the state, the doctors have said they started doing IVF as soon as Thursday. So basically, within a day of this bill being signed into law, they were back to business.
We've kept our lab fully operational. So that
one of the doctors of the practice told us that they are back to the full scope of fertility services, and that during this 2-week pause, they basically kept their labs fully operational so that as soon as this law was passed, they could reach out to patients, get those treatments back on track.
I also hope I have a successful pregnancy and we're able to make, you know, decisions down the road. We're not sure what's going to happen, but I just hope I will have the ability to make those decisions.
And the reason for that, all of the doctors there say, Brad, is because so many of these treatments are really planned down to the day, sometimes to the hour, and they don't want to have to miss a window of opportunity for those patients
right.
who've been really eager to be able to move forward.
While UAB is moving to promptly resume IVF treatments, we'll continue to assess developments and advocate for protections for IVF patients and our providers.
You also have the state's biggest hospital system saying that it's full steam ahead with IVF. It's rescheduling appointments now. But then there is that third clinic that put treatments on pause. They're taking a little bit more of a cautious approach. And part of the reason for that may be that they were the clinic that was in that original lawsuit, remember, that brought about this Supreme Court ruling. The reason why clinics might be a little bit more cautious is because the way that this law turned out, the way that it needed to get passed to get this overwhelming bipartisan support to get signed into law so quickly by the Republican governor, is that it is very narrow, Brad. Mm. It does not address the question that was really raised at the heart of Alabama Supreme Court ruling that frozen embryos are people. There's really no recognition of that. They don't decide that at all in this law.
Because this is the thing, Liz, it's just because you say, yeah, IVF clinics are shielded from criminal and like in these sorts of cases. Well, what are these sorts of cases? Because calling embryos people is a really big conceptual difference now that you'd imagine could apply to lots of scenarios.
It absolutely is. And some of the lawmakers we were talking to on the ground in Montgomery said, there are going to be more lawsuits about this.
For those families that are waiting, have already been waiting, this is a quick, resuming the services fairly quickly, but it does not address the long-term problem.
Whether it's about IVF, whether it's about other kinds of fertility care, I mean, there is concern that that ruling from the state Supreme Court opens the door to other lawsuits related to contraception, to birth control. I mean, it's hard to know exactly what the legal fallout will be from here. And there is an anti-abortion movement that is pushing for those types of restrictions. And they've been very vocal in their opposition to this IVF law that went into effect. They wanted the governor to veto it. Obviously, she didn't do that. So now the question kind of going forward in Alabama is, will there ultimately need to be a constitutional amendment that would basically enshrine protections for IVF in the state constitution? That's what some of the Democratic lawmakers there have told us. Unlikely that that's going to happen at the fast pace that they want, especially given that it is a GOP-controlled legislature.
Really interesting. Elizabeth Schulze at the forefront of all of our coverage on this groundbreaking ruling. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Brad.
Sunday is the 96th Academy Awards in Hollywood. What do you know? They're on ABC. They're actually starting an hour earlier than usual, 7 p.m. Eastern. Well, we can do better than that on start here. We got ABC's entertainment correspondent Jason Nathanson 61 hours earlier before the big broadcast. He's going to tell us what to expect here. Jason, first off, the telecast, like what will the actual award show look like here?
They haven't told us a whole lot. There was a press conference with the producers on Wednesday. There are a couple of ABC interviews with Jimmy Kimmel.
We're not ending earlier. We're just starting earlier. Okay, so the show's still going to be long.
So you kind of know what to expect from him. We do know Ryan Gosling will be singing his nominated song from Barbie, I'm Just Ken.
I'm just Ken, anywhere else I'd be.
That should be a very exciting production. And all the song nominees, Billie Eilish will be there as well. The song from Flamin' Hot, the Cheetos movie, is going to be done by Becky G. Really looking forward to that. Speeches. So I asked the producers if maybe they could make some more room for the speeches. No, it's going to be the same for everybody still. 45 seconds, and then they're going to be played off.
And then, because I'm a Philistine, Jason, like, I feel like I know, like, two of these. Like, I watched Barbie and Oppenheim. What should I have my eye on? Like, what do you have your eye on as far as potential big winners here?
Well, the storyline I predict for Monday morning, we're going to be talking about how Oppenheimer swept the Oscars.
Really?
That's the way things seem to be going. If you look at all the precursors, and those are the best tea leaves that we have, right? The Producers Guild Awards, that's the best predictor of what's going to win Best Picture because they use the same preferential ballot system, and also the producers are the ones in voting there. So that one, Oppenheimer won for that.
And I know what it means. If the Nazis have a bomb.
So you have Oppenheimer and Barbie, as you mentioned. I think two fantastic picks. And those were the movies of 2023. Right. And I always like to think about when you look back, when you do the 10-year look back, right? What are the movies that define that year? And Oppenheimer and Barbie are the movies that define that year. So with Oppenheimer winning, I'm perfectly fine with that. And I think that that's going to be the case. But then you have a bunch of other great movies. American Fiction was a really great satire about race and drew in a family drama as well. And it was funny. And then there's The Holdovers, which is a film about a kind of surly professor in the 1970s at a boarding school.
Sir, I don't understand.
That's glaringly apparent.
I can't fail this class.
Oh, don't sell yourself short, Mr. Coates. I truly believe that you can.
Paul Giamatti stars in that. It gives a really great performance. He's directed by Alexander Payne. And Davine Joy Randolph, also in that. She's fantastic as a mother who lost her son. Killers of the Flower Moon from Martin Scorsese, you know, a really epic drama, long, 3.5 hours, which a lot of people have pointed out the time on that, but about the Osage County, particularly the women of the Osage County who lost a lot of their family members during a very specific time in American history when people were coming in and trying to take their oil money. Some great performances in that as well. Anatomy of a Fall. That's another film that's getting a lot of attention about a woman whose husband dies and you're trying to figure out what really happened to him. Was it suicide? Did she have something to do? Did they have a fight? Did the dog do it? And yes, there is a dog in there and people are wondering, did the dog do it?
Your generosity conceals something dirtier and meaner.
It's getting a lot of attention, especially for the performance by Sandra Hüller. So, you know, there's a lot of great movies in the mix this year.
Well, and I hear you describe, you know, some of these dark horses and then Oppenheimer perhaps like taking everything. Is it possible Barbie might not walk away with any hardware? Because that makes me go back to the conversation we have every year about critical hits not matching up with the box office favorites. But Barbie happens to have been both. I guess I'm kind of wondering if this affects like the role that the Oscars play in Hollywood going forward.
You know, this is a discussion that we have often. I think the wins for Barbie are just getting to the stage, right? Just getting to the nominations, being a part of the night. I don't know that anybody expected it to win. And it could win. It could win in, say, production design or costumes. It could, if people really are pushing for it, it could win a Best Adapted Screenplay Oscar. That's where it has its best chance of getting Greta Gerwig, the co-writer and director of that film, on that stage. And I know a lot of people want to see her on that stage. It was the highest grossing movie of last year. It's a film that could have been a throwaway. It could have been forgotten. It could have come out and people said, "Eh, that's what we expected from Barbie," and then never thought about it again. They turned this into a cultural phenomenon. It was fantastic, and it showed, really, again, about the power of movies. What you can do when you put a great team together with Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie, you give it money, and you say, "Let's put it into the world and see what happens." People are going to respond. And one of the interesting things will be, and Jimmy Kimmel mentioned this when he was talking about the Oscars, is he's happy this year that he has movies like Oppenheimer and Barbie to kind of make jokes about. Because if you make a joke about Anatomy of a Fall and nobody's seen Anatomy of a Fall, they don't get the joke, right? But you're going to get a Barbie joke. You're going to get an Oppenheimer joke. And that's what's great for the film industry right now. Because the film industry really needs these kind of wins. this has been a terrible year so far. 2024, the first couple months.
For box offices, you mean?
Horrible. Also, you had the strike, right, which shut down production for months and months and months. And we're still recovering for that. It wasn't this quick ramp up. The industry is still very, very slow. So to put these films on display and say, here, we're actually producing some good stuff. You can go watch it. You can still go watch it. That's what a win that Hollywood needs, like, right?
Getting on stage is enough, as Jason Nathanson would say. All right. Thank you so much, buddy.
You're very welcome.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, have you ever thought you could run a better security line than the TSA, the new pilot program for passengers, after the break?
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
And one last thing. You might remember a couple weeks ago we had Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg on the show, and I asked him point blank, can you do anything about TSA agents who feel the need to yell at everyone in line all day? And he said...
I'll tell him to stop it.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so
much.
Well, perhaps I have more influence than I realized.
The TSA is expected its busiest spring break travel period ever, but there could be a future where you don't interact with an agent at the airport.
This week, the TSA has unveiled a new pilot program, passenger self-screening lanes at the busy Harry Reid International Airport in Las Vegas. Yeah, self-screening lanes, like self-checkout, but instead of scanning a bottle of milk, you're scanning yourself for weapons. They say they plan to test it for use in other cities around the country. And if you're wondering, am I supposed to pat myself down or something? I was right there with you. Here's how it actually works. You show up at the line for TSA PreCheck. For now, this only applies to PreCheck customers. And instead of a TSA person belting, take your coats off, leave your shoes on, go faster, please, go slower. Instead, you approach this conveyor belt, like your own personal space there. And a little video message is playing telling you what to put in the bins. Next to you, there are other little stations, little stalls, where others are doing the exact same thing. The idea is, once you get to this spot, you can move at your own pace without everyone waiting on the one slow person. Next step is the body scan, which again, relies less on officer instructions. If something does pop up on the scan, like keys in your back pocket, a message comes up on a video screen telling you to step out, put it in a tray, and scan yourself again. But think about how obnoxious this gets at the grocery store. A self-checkout machine might be blaring instructions at you that are out of sync with what you're doing. Then, when something goes wrong, it tells you to start from the beginning, even though you know a human would be helping you just correct the problem more quickly. There won't be as many TSA employees to help here, and that's the whole point. At a given checkpoint, they'll only have 8 officers instead of 12. It all depends on whether you think travelers need more instructions or more self-sufficiency. This is the Las Vegas airport, after all. Do you feel lucky? That's the thing with the self-checkout lanes. Like, it's either going really fast or really slow. I wonder, like, if I knew this was going to be my security experience, am I showing up 3 hours early now? Start Here is produced by the always punctual Kelly Therese, Jen Newman, Brenda Salinas Baker, Vika Aronson, Cameron Chertavian, Anthony Ali, Mauro Milwaukee, and Madeline Wood. Ariel Chester is our social media producer. Josh Cohan is director of podcast programming. I'm our managing editor. Laura Mayers, our executive producer. Thanks to Lakia Brown, John Newman, Tara Gimble, and Liz Alessi. Special thanks this week to Chris Berry, Jim Scholes, Emily Schutz, and Ben Siegel. I'm Brad Milkey. See you next week.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially 4 trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.